Hello and welcome to the second episode of this podcast, which will be in English this time. My name is Amelie Merkel and I'm the editor of the web magazine French Moms. In each episode, I receive a woman who tells us about an experience in her life as a mother and how this experience has enriched her motherhood. I believe sharing our experiences might help us face the challenges we are confronted to in our lives and families. It's when we are inspired by others that we gradually become the woman we are called to be and thus the best possible mother for our children. Today I'm happy to receive Sylvie on my podcast. Her story is very moving. She had to fight for 10 years and goes through numerous treatments to become a mother. And she tells us how the struggle made her grow before she even became a mom. Hello, Sylvie, thank you very much for welcoming me in your home. We are here today to hear your story. Just a few words about you. You're a French-American who grew up in Brazil. You went to the US to study. You got married there in 2005 and you started your life together in California. 3 years later, you thought about starting a family, but it didn't really work as planned. Can you tell us about this first realization that having kids might not be as easy as you would have hoped?
Hi, Amelie, and thank you for inviting me to this podcast and welcome to my home. So indeed, I married my husband in 2005 and then in 2008, we wanted to have a kid and then we saw that it was not happening for us. So, of course, I went to the doctor, as any American do, and they immediately gave us Clomid. It's a medication that helps your ovulation. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work.
Okay.
So we continued that doing that for about 6 months, and we saw that this was not working, and indeed it actually did the reverse, and I overstimulated.
Okay.
So we stopped everything. And then in 2010, because of my work, we moved to France, to Paris.
Yeah.
And back then I was 33 years old and I went to see the doctor again. And the doctor in France realized that Clomid didn't work for us.
Okay.
So we started the insemination.
Okay.
And we did 3 inseminations over there in 2 years. So
did you have a diagnosis at that time? Did you know why it didn't work?
So that's the strange thing. Okay. So every doctor that we would go and visit couldn't find what was wrong.
Okay.
Because all the tests showed that everything was okay and that it could work.
Yeah.
So there was no reason, really, that they have found that brought us to the conclusion that we couldn't have kids. That's why we continue with the process.
Yeah.
But after 3 insemination, it continued not working.
Yeah. Can you just pause and tell us what exactly is an insemination?
So insemination is the fact of getting my husband's sperms, clean the sperms at the clinic, and get only the viable sperms to be used.
Yeah.
And so we take those sperms, I go to the doctor, and in a syringe, in a very large syringe, I just insert the clean sperm to the closest possible to the tubes.
Okay. And in the meantime, you would have a boost of your fertility.
Exactly.
Okay.
So right before inserting those sperms, then I get some stimulation.
Yeah.
So it's, the insemination is really just a help.
Yeah.
It just puts the sperm where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I did 3 times.
Yeah.
The inseminations
in
Paris.
Period?
From 2010 to 2012.
Okay,
so I was
years.
33 to 35 years old. So I was getting to the age that we needed to do something else.
Yeah.
Due to work again, we moved to this time to Hamburg in Germany.
Yeah.
And I went to see the doctor again, and this time I went to see directly a fertility clinic.
Yeah, I guess it's also difficult for you to have to explain your situation every time to a new doctor and make the same analysis and tell your story and everything.
Yeah, that was a bit of the challenge to have to do the medical exams every time and to I guess, to build your dossier, your medical dossier, every time for different doctors.
Yeah.
So I went to see a fertility doctor this time. So this doctor in Hamburg recommended that we go straight to the IVF,
okay.
so in vitro fertilization, and indeed to do even a step further than IVF, which is called ICSI.
Okay.
I-C-S-I.
Okay.
Which is, when you talk about IVF, is you take the egg from the woman and you take the sperm and you just let them go together by themselves.
Okay.
And the ICSI is the matter of taking the egg, taking the sperm and putting the sperm inside of the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we did. I was 36 years old. This was in 2013. And we did it for 2 years. And during that time, I did 5 IVF.
Okay.
And all those IVFs, they found about 8 to 9 eggs that were viable.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, they were able to implant 1 or 2 eggs. So there is very often a loss in a viable egg at the time of implantation.
Yeah.
And I think this is not to worry about. And then implanted 1 or 2, it's obviously the choice of the parents, but also a medical condition. And women should hear their doctors, but also hear their heart and what they feel as well. Doctors can only know until a certain point, but I think the parents, they should also be able to determine how many eggs they want to implant.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the 5 IVF, none of them worked.
Let's perhaps just take a step back on how did you feel at that time? I mean, 5 IVF in 2 years. So first, physically, it must be exhausting, right?
Yeah, so I mean, you are right to point that out because it's a very tough process.
Yeah.
And doing an IVF, now that I've done even 1 or 2 or 5, the process is the same.
Yeah.
And it's not only tiring and a lot of hormones on your body, on your mind, and sometimes you do crazy things, you don't understand why. So it's a big impact on you physically and also morally, I would say. It's a tough process. We always expect to have kids, at least me. I grew up and I, you know, having dolls, and I thought myself one day I want to be a mother, of course. And trying for so long, it's a very emotional process.
Yeah.
And having a partner, of course, that understands and that is there by your side is very important. But I think it's important to say that sometimes you are the one very emotional about this and your partner is not as emotional because he's not going through all the ups and downs as you. But I think it's okay. I think it's good that there's a balance in the family,
to have a
in the union,
one
stable.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank God that we have one that is more calm,
because
you wouldn't want two emotional people in a couple.
Of course.
So, yeah.
But how was it in your couple? Were you both as determined to have a child, or is that something that you might have discussed sometimes? Was it always something obvious for you two?
So since the beginning, since we've known each other, we talked about having kids, and this was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
We knew we wanted to have kids on the long term, so we were both determined in that idea. And then when we started with the IVF, I was surprised as well that we were both as determined as before for every single process.
Okay.
I think we never asks ourselves, is this really for us?
Okay, so I guess it was really important for you to have a real partner in this, that you didn't ever doubt that you were.
There's some, of course, you will doubt sometimes, but I think you have to look at the big picture.
Yeah,
and on the big picture, if we both want to have a kid, then it's worth, you know, staying together and fight for it.
Yeah.
And I think that was important. And of course, in every couple, this is a very tough situation there's little discussion, but in the big picture of things, we were on the same page every time.
Yeah.
At the fourth one, we gave a 1 year break between the IVF.
Okay, so you had 4 in 1 year?
Exactly.
So it means...
Yeah. Every one in February, one in April, one in August, and one in December.
I can't imagine what you must have been through.
So we were very determined. Yeah. So that helped to have the mind, to tell your mind what you want to do and then to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But the fourth one, that was the tough one.
Mm-hmm.
We had two tough ones, the fourth and the fifth. The fourth one, I said, that's it. I don't want it anymore. Mm-hmm. And my husband said, okay, this is you. This is, it's your body.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want it anymore, that's okay.
Yeah.
So I think that was important as well, to go or not, or to stop.
To have no pressure.
So we gave a break, 1 year break.
Yeah.
And then by the fifth one, I was ready to perhaps, do it again.
Yeah.
And we said, why not? Let's try again. And we did. And we tried again. So a year later, in 2014, and unfortunately, it didn't work. By the fifth one, I knew I didn't want anything anymore.
Yeah.
I told myself, that's it. That's not for us. Let's stop. My body's not responding. It's not working.
Yeah. You had been trying for 7 years then? Or?
So yeah, this was 2014, and we started in 2008. So yeah, I was trying for 6 years.
And how do you actually face every disappointment? Because at the fifth time, 3 insemination and 5 IVF, 8 disappointments. How do you face this? Did you have, something that helped you when you heard the result from the doctor? Did you have a ritual? Did you have a getaway weekend? What did you do?
So I guess it's a good question. And I wish I had the perfect answer to give you, but I think it's a very personal reaction.
Yeah.
To start with, I am a very positive person. Mm-hmm. I think that helps.
Yeah.
And second, I'm very determined to something that I want. And that was, I think, a bit of a shock for me, that until now, everything that I had planned worked.
Yeah.
And it was easy to plan.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of you wanted to do something. It was
the first this thing time, that you had no control on.
There's no control. It's nature. And I think that was something that made me realize how hard it is to not be able to plan something in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And for everything that I had, that organization in the house or at work, I'm very planned. A checkbox. Yes, I do this. And I think this is what helped me. Doing one, the next step, then the next, and the next. And then to keep going for every time.
Mm-hmm.
So at the second one, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
Every time I was asking the doctor when he was giving me the result, I would ask him, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a next step? And I'm ready to
take on. So you didn't just cry yourself out and ask you why it happened to you, but just ask what comes next?
Well, of course I would cry when I get the results.
Yeah.
I would cry for maybe 2-3 days, which I hope and I think it's a normal reaction, but I would move on to the next step after.
Yeah.
And again, it's something that every person reacts differently. And I think if somebody goes through a process like this, it's because already that person is strong.
Mm-hmm.
A person that cannot handle it will probably not have gone through the steps like this.
Mm-hmm.
So things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
For me, it was also I chose to do that.
Okay.
Now I need to get the result either bad or negative.
Did you hate every pregnant woman you saw on the street?
No. Surprisingly, no.
I think I would have.
Surprisingly, no, because I thought this was it's very personal.
Yeah.
But what I did hate, and I can say it, is the fact that people would talk about it a lot at some point, which is normal. I started to wanted to have a kid at 30 years old, and I finally got pregnant at 40. I don't know if you want to spoil the end of the story.
That's done.
But during this period, there's a lot of my friends and family that have kids.
Yeah, of course.
And that was a tough period.
Yeah.
And so we had very tough moments with, a group of friends that didn't know I was going through.
Yeah.
my journey that would talk about having kids or, oh my God, I don't know how women can do it if they're not pregnant, or
okay.
Oh my God, it must be horrible for them. Yeah. And I'm sitting right next to it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At some point, of course, I say,
which
okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
Yeah,
I'm not. I don't want
to
be part of the conversation
yourself.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Right. So,
but that's also not very delicate. I mean, you might guess as a friend that what your friend is going through.
Yeah, but sometimes you're so maybe into your own pregnancy and what you're going through, and all the friends are asking, you know, you about questions about the pregnancy, that you forget about what can be maybe happening next door.
Yeah.
And maybe I did some of the misstep like this. For not pregnancy, but for other subjects, right? So we never know. So it's not necessarily their fault, I would say. It's more about me, what I was going through, and I didn't want to go through those type of conversation. So of course I had sad moments, for sure. I cannot say that I was happy. The other tough part is the pressure of the society, pressure of the friends and pressure of the family asking you about, so when are you going to have kids? And sometimes you're in the middle of an IVF treatment and you don't want to necessarily talk about it. You're trying to be discreet and say, you know, maybe one day. And people insist, no, but you have to do it now. You're getting older, and have you seen the family? You need to have kids. And so there are some difficult moments that you have to handle. But again, I think everything happened for a reason, and it happened to me, and I was able to, I guess, handle it the best
and
I could.
You wouldn't just leave the room and storm out.
And storm out and start making enemies. Of course not. Yeah. Of course not.
But the hardest part was then to see your friends having kids, or were you also envious?
No, I was never envious, and I was never angry at other people. But what would make me sad was the fact that I was not part of a community.
Yeah, okay. You were isolated.
I was isolated because I didn't have the same children topic to talk about.
Yeah.
Or so we start realizing with my husband that we had friends, of course, with kids, which was fine. But every time there was maybe a birthday party, or we were not invited because of, naturally, it's none of that. It's just how society is.
Yeah.
We're not invited because it's not the same, you know, topic we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I realized, that if we don't have kids, we need to make friends. And I think naturally we start gravitating to people that have no kids.
Mm-hmm. And then you started thinking about adoption?
Yeah, so then in 2014, when we did our fifth IVF and it didn't work, and this was, it was very hard on us, because I think we realized that maybe a naturally born baby was not for us, we start talking about adoption. So in 2014, I was already 37 years old. We didn't really speak German at the time, and we were not German. So when we went to see the adoption agency in Hamburg, they told us that, first of all, we can only adopt until the mom is 40 years old.
Okay.
So that would make us 3 years only.
Okay.
And I have just spent, you know, the last 6 years trying to have kids, so I know how time is precious.
Yeah. And you know that the adoption process are always quite long.
Adoption processes are long. And because of the fact that we are not German, we couldn't adopt a German kid. That's by German law.
Mm-hmm.
So we would need to see international adoption.
Okay.
Which means that you cannot adopt a baby, a newborn.
Okay.
Because what happens is, when the child is born and it's given to adoption, the local agency tries to find, first of all, the local parents.
Mm-hmm.
Second, if the parents, they don't want to keep the baby, they try local adoption.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, only then the kid is put to international adoption. By then, the kid is around 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long process, and it took us many meetings I actually counted them, 13 meetings with the adoption agency. It's a very long process. So I don't know how the process is abroad, but in Germany, it's a very long process. A lot of paperwork, a lot of psychological meetings, tests, and you name it.
Yeah, but you were still determined.
We were still determined. I knew that I wanted to be a mother, no matter what. And my husband wanted to be a father. So we were determined to continue with the adoption. And surprisingly, the adoption process was something that we always talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Even before trying to have kids.
It was something that you had in
adoption,
your mind.
Yeah, yeah. Adoption was a topic that was brought up already early on in our relationship.
Okay. Is that because adoption is already something that you know in your family?
For sure. I think that definitely. I have an adopted sister in my family. And I have an adopted nephew.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
In my family as well. And my husband, on his side, he has also adopted nephews and nieces.
Okay, so it was something that you knew.
That we're very familiar with. Yeah. It was adoption in other countries.
Yeah.
So for my husband, it was in the US.
Yeah.
And for me, it was in Brazil.
Yeah.
So we were a bit familiar with that process, but never in Germany.
Yeah. Which was more complicated than it would have been.
Yeah.
Had you given up on having your own child at that time?
Never.
Yeah.
Something that never throughout the whole process, we never give up to having kids, although our options were getting limited and limited and limited.
Yeah.
Yeah, every year. So that was a difficult... I was not prepared not to have kids.
Yeah. And at that time, you had to move again to Denmark.
Yes, we had to move again. This is our life. So we moved again to Denmark. And in Denmark, we were very happy. And one day, I just decided to go check a fertility clinic again.
Yeah.
And just one more time, and maybe it's a different country, they use different resources,
whatever. Air is different.
The air is different. And we tried, and in a miracle, I guess, it worked, and I got pregnant.
So there was nothing different medically, or there was no reason that it would work this time and not the other ones?
No, not that we know of.
No medical, no technical novelty or anything?
No.
Yeah.
Not that we know of.
Mm-hmm. And it worked.
And it worked.
So you were pregnant for the first time.
And then I was pregnant for the first time.
After 10 years.
After 10 years, exactly. I got pregnant in 2018 and I had started in 2008.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I can't imagine. How was it for you to feel your baby move in your belly when you had hoped so many times and so long to feel this? Did you have perhaps a hard time accepting this pregnancy, or was it obvious at the beginning?
Well, I didn't have a hard time accepting the pregnancy. I guess I did, but I had a hard time accepting it was positive.
Okay.
I couldn't, because I never had a positive result. And
so how many tests did you do to be sure?
3 or 4 tests.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't believe. It's not I was denying it. It's just I couldn't believe that this was happening.
Yeah,
I think once we got the blood results, it was the happiest day of my life.
Yeah. And the rest of the pregnancy, did it go well? Were you especially looked after by the doctors, or was it a real normal pregnancy?
I think because of the age, because I was 41 at the time when I got pregnant. And because I had so many unsuccessful IVF before, I was probably looked at a bit more carefully.
But not because it was an IVF child?
Not because it was an IVF.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. The beginning was tough. I had ups and downs because I had some bleeding.
Okay.
I had some cramps. And back then I was traveling. And the doctors in France, they prohibited me to continue traveling because of the bleeding and because it was at the 4th month.
Mm-hmm.
It was the 4th going on to the 5th month. And then after the 5th month, it stopped completely.
I imagine that you had quite a shock when you had those bleedings.
Yes, of course. The first reaction was I lost it.
Yeah.
But then the baby was fine.
It was a tough one.
It was a tough one.
And baby Charlotte, because it's a girl.
It's a girl.
Was born in January this year.
So baby Charlotte was born. Yeah. Yes. She's a fighter.
Yeah.
She's a fighter.
And you had a C-section?
And then I had a C-section at the end. It was not planned.
Okay.
But because I had some pre-eclampsia.
Okay, yeah.
So they highly recommended me to do a C-section. And you know what? I'm happy with the doctor's choice. I just want a baby alive and in my arms, whatever method they choose to do it.
And are you now the proudest mom on nurse?
I don't know, maybe.
So it took you 10 years to bear this child. Do you think this path to become a mother made you a different one?
I think yes, definitely. Taking 10 years to have a child makes me realize that, of course, life is short. But also, it's not only the 10 years trying to have a kid, it's also at the age. I had my daughter at 41 years mm-hmm. old. And being 41 and having gone through this whole path and my work experience and life experience, etc., I guess I'm wiser as a person. And you don't look at a child or behavior the same way, although mm-hmm. she's very small yet. But I try to enjoy every single little steps of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
If she throws, you know, food on the floor, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I want to try to enjoy even that moment.
Yeah.
So I looked at it differently. And I think I lived also the life that I wanted before.
Yeah.
So I don't regret anything now, having a kid or not, you know, going out anymore. Or I don't need that anymore. I think I had my bucket full already of those. So yeah, it's a very enjoyable experience for me. I guess the negative, or I would say the disadvantage of being a mom at 40 years old is, of course, I'm a little bit more tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't anticipated the amount of work that a child takes or that needs you.
Yeah.
It is a lot of work and it's a lot of responsibilities and a lot of worries.
Yeah.
That you have as a mom. And this is something that I hadn't realized as well, is when of course I was by myself, I mean with my husband, but with no kids, you only think about yourself and your husband. And once you have a kid, you think about the kid all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You worry about the kid all the time.
Yeah.
And this is a big change for me and the way I live my life.
Yeah.
So
your priorities have changed.
The priorities have changed. I guess the 40 isn't it the new 30, so.
Yeah, that's right. Would you have anything to say to a woman who would be in the same situation about what kept you going, what helped you? And
I would say that if you have chosen to go through the same journey, be sure to be ready for the results.
Mm-hmm.
And it is tough. It's not a given. So you have to be strong. And you have to be strong towards the society, the friends, and keep going if you feel like you need to keep going,
mm-hmm.
but not because you feel obliged to.
Okay.
And if you don't want it anymore, don't feel like you're giving up, because it's not giving up. It's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want it anymore, and that's it. And it's your choice, and it's your life.
One last small question. You're French. What makes you a typical French mom?
That's an interesting question, because typical French mom, maybe not, but yeah, I do have a love. I have so I try to teach her already some of the French education. I try to teach her patience already. I try to teach her to be independent.
Yeah.
And by independent, I mean to give her the time that she needs for her to figure out things on her own.
Okay.
And not giving her the answers.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm talking about, looks like a big people, but if she's playing around and she cannot reach the toy,
yeah.
I'm not going to jump on it and give her the toy. Mm-hmm. I want her to be able to, capable of trying at least to reach out the toys. And I know in different cultures, that's very different.
Okay.
In America or in Brazil, the way moms act normally, it's different. So I want to create a strong character as much as I can, and I'll try to incorporate some of the French education.
Yeah, so that she might be as strong as you are.
Hopefully, but she'll have her own personality, yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you very much, Sylvie, for telling us your story, for sharing with us your path and all the doubts you've been through and the fight. And thank you for your strengths and your optimism. I wish you the best with Charlotte and your husband. And thank you for this conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much for giving me the medium to be able to share this story, and hopefully that can help other women around the world with your famous podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sylvie, for sharing your story with us. You don't only carry the scars of your C-section, but of all the fights, all the tears you might have shed. Many women will recognize the struggle in your voice, and we hope to have given them hope. The one among us who didn't have to face any of these challenges are surely even more grateful for what they have. Thank you for that. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't hesitate to rate it with 5 stars and register for the podcast. I will also be grateful for any feedbacks and comments. I'll be here soon with a new interview of an Everyday Warrior. Thank you for hearing me.